Good morning. You are listening to Lowell Association for the Blind's Lab Radio. Lab Radio is a member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network, your main source of accessible community news and information. We're located in Lowell, Massachusetts. We read local news, editorials, feature stories, and more. Lab Radio is brought to you by volunteers and the staff of the Lowell Association for the Blind. Lab would like to thank the Nancy L. and the Richard K. Donahue Charitable Foundation for their support. This is Rosemary, and this morning I have two issues of the Andover Townsman to read. I'll start with the edition of February 5th to February 11th. From Page News, a 432-unit complex plan for Old River Road. From Andover, town boards and commissions will begin to review the process of a 432-unit mixed-use development proposed for 100 Old River Road. The Conservation Commission reviewed the project's notice of intent Tuesday for proposed construction of new building, parking, surface, outdoor amenities, stormwater management systems, native landscaping, and invasive species management. The project, referred to the Commons at River Road, would build a five-story mixed-use complex with 432 residential units, 65 of them designed as affordable housing units. The ground floor, as proposed, would house retail space and other amenities such as a fitness center. Courtyards are designed throughout the site, along with plans for a dog park, according to the application. The units range from one-bedroom spaces to two-bedroom townhouses and three-bedroom townhouses. The project would increase the town's subsidized housing inventory. There's a picture of the rendering of the Commons at River Road. The project proposed to redevelop the site at 100 Old River Road. The project will address criteria under special permit, bringing much-needed housing supply to Andover and the surrounding area, as well as providing a retail component which will enhance local services. The project is a joint venture between John M. Corcoran and Company and SV and Partners, known as Applications to JMC SVP Old River Road, the owner of the site. The application is signed by Peter Mahoney, Executive Vice President of John M. Corcoran and Company. Road frontage for the complex is on River Road and Old River Road. It also includes plans for open-air parking, garage, and surface parking. The project would offer 648 combined parking spaces available for the residential units and retail use. Wetlands would be undisturbed and existing conditions improved with previous surfaces, rain gardens, and other landscaping. The application is also proposing renovating invasive species with new plantings and an added sidewalk for Old River Road. The proposed storm water management system will improve the site's drainage with an operation and maintenance plan, the application said. Local news from the Andover Townsman. Residents won't have to pay to use Stevens Pond again this summer. From North Andover, Stevens Pond will be fee-free again this summer for residents to enjoy. The decision came during the Select Board January 28th as outgoing Youth and Recreation Service Executive Director Rick Gorman presented requests of free access to the pond for another year. It was his recommendation, with support from Town Manager Melissa Rodriguez, to do a second year without charging residents permit fees to use the pond, following a successful summer season last year doing the same. Stevens Pond is a public beach at 522 Pleasant Street that's open to North Andover residents by registering for a pass good for the summer. Historically, the pound ran a $15,000 to $20,000 deficit. Last year, the town decided for the first time to try out free passes to use Stevens Pond, as it would have to continually reimburse residents for closures in the past. The town then absorbed the entire budget to operate the pond, which comes in around $50,000. Passes used to offset some of the costs. She said last season's free passes was a huge success. Gorman said the town had the most residents ever sign up for permits last year, although it was likely due to no cost. I think we are earning the trust back of the community that we are invested in Stevens Pond. 30% of those who signed up for a petition did not pick up during the summer, but the final 5 weeks in particular brought new faces to Stevens Pond. There was also an increase of young families and senior citizens using the pond for the season. Stevens Pond was open for 7 out of 9 summer weeks with much better weather testing. At the beginning of the season, the goal is to open all summer weeks, but the last 2 weeks took a tailspin. The free permits have been clearly advertised to residents as limited to 1 year, maybe 2 year run from the start, he said. When asked by the board if it would be hard for residents to go back to paying for passes, the town manager's office said, and Joe Oxtino, the new and recreational service director, planned to hold discussions on any possible fees in the future. From the local news, Andover Townsman. Working group focuses on Route 133 corridor projects amenities. From Andover, a working group is fleshing out ideas for possible enhancements with the Route 133 corridor project as the town forward on the new phase in its design with the state. The proposed Route 133 corridor project will reconstruct part of Route 133, spanning 1.25 miles from West Paris to Shawshin Village, improving the intersection Beacon Street and Shawshin Road and Route 28. Extended details of the corridor project were highlighted at Tuesday's planning board. Improvements include a shared used path along part of the roadway. A hearing was held on 25% design plan in the fall of 2024. The public supported a preferred alternative design with shared use paths along the north side of the roadway and improved pedestrian accessibility. The group met several times and performed a site walk. Some members of the group village neighborhood, its meetings have centered around how two anchoring intersections can be reimagined and more inviting for all users. Corridor enhancements may include an expanded plaza, new trees, ornamental plantings, low stone walls, and how to build off of them, pedestrian light fixtures, street benches, and bicycle parking. Lewin said the group wants to stay true to Shawshin Square's history, but also pull inspiration from other parts of the town. Landscaping design may include removing some trees due to aging, road geometry changes, or to plant new ones. Once there is a consensus of the amenities, it can be petitioned for a future town meeting to cover the town's cost. Announcement: Rotary Scholarship, Andover. Several scholarships will be awarded to students from Andover enrolled or to be enrolled on or before September 2026 in a post-secondary educational or vocational institution. The application deadline is April 2, 2026. Please send all inquiries to Rotary Club of Andover, P.O. Box 1152, Andover, the zip 01810. From the opinion page, asked Joan. Symptoms of heart problems for women, men can differ. Question to Anne. My 72-year-old sister suffered a heart attack this past fall. She is recovering, thank goodness, but we are all still in shock that it happened. When her symptoms started, she thought she had the flu. Is it true that the signs of a heart attack are different for women and men? I'm so glad to hear that your sister is on the mend. A heart attack is scary. It's understandable that your sister didn't recognize her symptoms right away. Many women mistake the signs of a heart attack for other illnesses, like the flu or acid reflux. The signs can be different than those we associate with heart attacks in men. Many people are surprised to learn heart disease is the number one cause of death for women in the U.S. and worldwide. Signs and symptoms of heart attack can be different depending on the person, but here are some things to look for. Chest pain, pain or discomfort in the jaw, neck, back, both arms, or shoulders. Feeling wake, lightheaded, or faint. Shortness of breath. Symptoms more common in women. Unexplained tiredness. Nausea, vomiting. Women are often very good at pushing through discomfort, but when it comes to your heart, it's important not to ignore that feeling. Trust your instincts and seek out right away. Listen to your body and speak up when something doesn't feel right. It's important that part of staying healthy as we age. I'm happy your sister is healing, and I wish her continued good health and strength in the days ahead. Are you caring for an older adult or need help finding healthy aging resources? Our experienced staff is available to help. Call us online or visit us. Call us or visit us online, and you can reach HealthSpan at 1-800-892-0890. Again, that number, 800-892-0890. A letter to the editor. Striking Starbucks workers deserve support. To the editor of the Andover Townsman. In an era of historically high cost living, Starbucks employees have suffered under the draconian and unfair labor practices. Their wages have stagnated, leaving those hard-working people in the dust. At the same time, Starbucks has aggressively engaged in illegal union-busting tactics. In their struggle for a fair working environment, unionized Starbucks baristas have been on strike for 3 months, the longest national unfair labor practices strike in the company's history. These hard-working people are only demanding the basic right to which they are entitled, fair wages, a reliable schedule, and the freedom to form a union. As a college student from North Andover, I know many people who try their hardest to scrape by while working as a barista at Starbucks and elsewhere. These people deserve better, and they deserve our help to fight for it. Until Starbucks agrees to negotiate and treat its workers with the respect they deserve, I will not give another cent to that greedy corporation. I exhort everybody to do the same. No contract, no coffee. And this is signed by Aidan Flynn. From the Andover Townsman, renowned ceramics artist works comes to Brooks School. From North Andover, a Philadelphia artist, ceramist, social activist, and educator will have his work and pottery on display at Brooks School for the next 5 weeks. Nationally renowned ceramic artist Roberto Lugo's Invisible Ink exhibit will run through March 8th in the Robert Lehman Art Center Gallery at Brooks School, 1160 Great Pond Road in North Andover. The gallery is open from 8 to 6 Mondays to Fridays and 9 to noon on Saturdays. A reception with Lugo took place last Friday and provided an opportunity to engage with the artist alongside his art. The Lehman Art Center Gallery hosts a number of exhibits annually. The Pennsylvania-based artist reimagines traditional ceramic techniques with a modern twist. He hand-paints and molded surfaces and incorporates different elements to transform the clay into cultural storytelling to reclaim history from the margins. Lugo's work is known for its fusion of classical forms with urban graffiti, portraitures, European and Asian art, hip-hop aesthetics, and pointed social commentary on race, poverty, inequality, and representation. His pieces are in permanent collections at the Met, Museum of Fine Arts Boston, the Philadelphia Museum of Art, and Brooklyn Museum. Lugo was in Lawrence in November for Artistry Unleashed, an arts conference at the Arts Academy Lawrence High School, where he was the keynote speaker. He visited with Brooks School students in arts and performance, jazz, history, and ceramic classes, leading multiple workshops and lectures with them ahead of his artist reception recently. And there are several pieces of his artwork along with this article. Mistral Goes Hollywood. From Andover, Chamber Music Ensemble Mistral brought Valentine's concerts back to town, celebrating the music of the silver screen, and it was held 4 o'clock Saturday at West Parish Church, 129 Reservation Road. This year's program, Mistral Goes Hollywood, is the crossroads where concert music and cinema meet. With a cast of strings, piano, clarinets, and flute, it will offer chamber works and film scores by composers who moved fluidly between the concert hall and the silver screen. Mistral, in its 29th season, was funded by its artistic director and flautist Julie Skolnick and her husband Michael Brower. The ensemble performs a regular 5 concert series each season in Andover and Brookline. The concert demonstrated how storytelling through music long predicted films and how film in turn expanded the expressive reach of classical composition. The concert opened with John Corigliano's Red Violet Capriccio, a virtuosic solo work drawn from his Academy Award winning score for the red violin. The piece distills the intensity and drama of the film into a compact, technically demanding showcase for the violin. This was performed by longtime Boston Symphony violinist Lucia Lynn. The music then shifted to the work of composer John Williams, who has shaped the emotional landscape of modern cinema. His melodies and themes have evoked the haunting tragedy of Schindler's List or the inner radiance of Princess Leia. The program also honored the earlier lineage of composer-storyteller Bernard Herrmann, best known for his collaborations with Alfred Hitchcock, reshaped film music through his bold orchestration and psychological insight. The performance featured Herrmann's string quartet arrangement of music from Psycho. Dmitri Shostakovich and Sergei Prokofiev are represented by pieces that brought their voices into the music they wrote. Shostakovich's Waltz No. 2 and Prokofiev's Overture on Hebrew Themes. The program included the final moment of Nino Rota's trio for clarinet, cello, and piano. The concert concluded with a look at film's music continuing evolutions. John Cusack's film noir is a contemporary composer's homage to a genre defined by shadows and restraints, while Enrico Morricone's Cinema Paradiso serves as a reminder of music's ability to convey emotions beyond words. From the Andover Townsman, Country Club starts process of town approval to cut trees. A local country club is seeking approval to remove about 30 trees to improve the usability of the golf course. The North Andover Country Club filed a notice of intent with the Conservation Commission and Massachusetts Department of Environmental Protection to incorporate a vegetation management plan to maintain, remove, and replant some trees and shrubs on the grounds. The Conservation Commission was updated on its proposal on January 28. The proposal includes removing combinations of 32 upland trees and shrubs on the property at 520 Great Pond Road that are within the high water elevation of Lake Chichewick and the topping of large shrubs on fairways. Trees and shrubs proposed to be removed are on the ninth fairway along the lake between the club's playground and tennis courts. Shrubs would be topped around the first and ninth fairways. The shore where the trees would be cut down has been subject to continuous flooding over the last few years. There are a number of upland plant species and trees that are either sick, diseased, or die with more flooding. General Manager Boyd Hulk said there are 300 trees along the lakefront. The removal would affect about 10% of the trees, but the club wants to replace them with ones that will thrive. The goal is to cut the trees, leave the stumps as close to the ground as possible, and then replant the area with native shrubs that are wildlife-friendly and berry-producing shrubs. The ground would additionally be enhanced with seed mix. The height of the shrubs in the fairway is posing a hazard to golfers who lose their sight distance and can't see other golfers ahead of them. The shrubs pose a safety issue for golfers who can't see or may hit others with golf balls if the vegetation isn't trimmed. The club would also like to remove a weeping willow that's dying before it collapses and falls onto the golf course. Commissioner Melissa Valentino said the topping of shrubs at the fairway makes sense to her. However, the trees proposed to be cut down along the lake shore are in a flood zone. The golf course has perennial streams that flow through the first and ninth fairways to the lake. Due to the sensitive nature of the lake, Valentino said more thought should go into any planning and the size of shrubs to make it a better living edge for the lake. She also asked for the management of water flowing from the golf course into Lake Kachishua to be considered for natural treatment of phosphorus runoff. The commission requested the country club seek a certified arborist to survey the trees. The board also wants to perform a site walk when the weather permits. But until the planning board approves a watershed special permit, the commission is stuck in what it can do. Commission Chair Albert Manzi said he also suggests the club see if a shrub conservation plan is applicable for what it's trying to accomplish. The planning board denied Hulk application for an emergency watershed special permit. The board wants the club to go through the proper process of approval for the permit because the tree's proximity to an important asset is the town's water supply. Merrimack Engineering Services had prepared the application that detailed the trees covered by the proposal were compromised after being submerged in high water. The emergency permit was sought because of the club's limited window of January to February to do work when the ground is frozen to bring heavy machinery onto the course without damaging its irrigation system. The Conservation Commission will continue the hearing on February 25th. And here's a picture of the area at the north end of a country club where it is proposed to cut down 31 of the trees at 500 Great Pond Road. You are listening to the Lowell Association for the Blind's Lab Radio. Lab Radio is a member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network. Lab would like to thank UMass Lowell, the WUML-FM, for providing the radio signal that allows us to broadcast 5 days a week. I'll now read a few articles from the Andover Townsman from the week of February 12th to the 28th. I'm sorry, to the 18th. That's today. Front page news. Police investigate burglary at downtown store. Police are combing through surveillance footage around a downtown retail store that was burglarized the morning of February 5th. Andover Police Department reported the Andover Collection at 40 Main Street was notified about a break-in at 7 a.m. Thursday from a passerby. The Andover Collection sells Phillip Academy and town merchandise. The person reported the window to the shop was damaged and saw the front door open. Police found the door was ajar and a small glass panel near the doorknob was locked but was broken. Responding officers saw money on the floor along with an empty smash cash register and its tray on the floor behind the counter. It wasn't immediately clear how much money was stolen. Nothing else appeared disturbed in the store. Police processed the scene and has found no fingerprints. It could have been a lot worse, store manager Rosanna Esaldi said. Thankful no one was working or hurt. Briefs around town from the Andover Townsman. From North Andover. Just in time for Lover's Holiday, the North Andover Historical Society hosted Love Letters, an A.R. Gurney Pulitzer Prize nominated play last Friday and Saturday. Love Letters tells the story of a lifelong, complex relationship between two people, the letters, notes, and cards they exchanged from childhood into adulthood. The North Andover Historical Society is proud to have Black Dog Theater Company as they perform this fantastic stage play in the intimate Worden's Theater at 800 Massachusetts Avenue in North Andover. It starred David Chanel and Elizabeth Carroll and was directed by Karen Molan. Ales and Trails Hike on Sundays from Andover. This month, Oak and Iron Brewery in Andover Trails, the Andover Village Improvement Society, and the Appalachian Mountain Club invites folks to Andover Ales and Trails, a Sunday hiking series designed to keep residents active during the winter. The series leads folks from Oak and Iron Brewing Company at 18 Red Spring Road along easy hiking trails. Hikes are scheduled for 1:15 to 3 p.m. on February the 22nd. Guests will carpool to the trailhead and embark on the hike that is welcoming for all levels of hikers. Folks should plan on snow or ice and come prepared with proper footwear. The group will return mid-afternoon for food and beverages at the brewery. Each hike is limited to 15 people, and attendees must register on the Appalachian Mountain Club website. For more information, call 978-405-4077. Again, that number to register for Oak and Iron Brewery hikes, call 978-405-4077. Black Women Legacies in Massachusetts, from North Andover. Alexandra Russell, Executive Director of the Boston Women's Heritage Trail, will highlight African American women memorials drawings from her book, Black Women Legacies, Public History, Sightseen and Unseen, at 3 p.m. on Sunday at the North Andover Historical Society at 899 Massachusetts Avenue in North Andover. Local communities have been fervent memorializing of African American achievements in the United States for centuries, and Russell reveals how they established a national infrastructure of name memorials during the Jim Crow era. She also discusses how local advocacy has shaped the public history landscape in Massachusetts and beyond through commemorations of women like Phyllis Wheatley, Harriet Tubman. The centennial celebration of the founding of the Negro History Week, now Black History Month, by Carter G. Woodson in 1926, and America 250 commemorations are timely reminders of the importance of documenting and disseminating the African American experience for current and future generations. Commuter rail service suspended. The Massachusetts Bay Authority and Coleus Commuter Services posted a reminder to passengers that commuter rail trains will not service North Station on select weekends from January through April. This will allow for necessary signal improvements work just outside of North Station. The work will take place February 28th, March 1st, 7th, 8th, 9th, March 21st, 22nd, March 28th, 29th, April 11th, 12th, and April 24th through 27th. On the Haverhill Line, Orange Line service will be replaced by regular train service between North Station and Oak Grove. From Ask Joan, the opinion page. Meals on Wheels, feed the spirit of those who volunteer. I often hear from readers about how important the Meals on Wheels program is to their families. These daily home-delivered meals make a real difference for loved ones living on fixed incomes. They give caregivers a break from having to cook. Visits from our volunteer drivers are a check-in that gives adult children who live far away peace of mind. We're always looking for volunteer drivers to keep this program rolling, and right now the need for volunteers is especially great in two communities, Lawrence and Lowell. In Lawrence, nearly 650 older adults receive Meals on Wheels. In Lowell, that number is more than 1,000. Meals on Wheels routes are a greater volunteer opportunity for individuals who want to make a difference. Over the year, we've had corporate teams, religious organizations, students groups, and nonprofits adopt routes. The position offers compensation, flexibility, and something that is hard to measure: the knowledge that you are helping your neighbors stay in their homes and in their community. As part of National Nutrition Month, we're also inviting civic leaders, local businesses, and others to help deliver meals throughout the month of March as community champions, so they can see firsthand how Meals on Wheels fights food insecurities and loneliness. There are a few ways you can help. You can spread the word about our nutrition services, or make a referral, or you can donate to this virtual program, to this vital program. You can become a volunteer or a driver. If you would like to adopt a route, please contact us. Our number here is 978-946-1235. Again, that number, 978-946-1235. And there's a picture of the type of food that gets delivered by volunteers to those in need. Local news. Mothers and son dance the night away from Andover. Families dance to all the latest radio favorites and classics to celebrate their special little guys as the Recreation Department held its annual Valentine's Day dance on last Friday. The event was held at the Cormier Youth Center, 40 Whittier Court. Mothers, aunts, grandmothers, and guardians celebrated the boys in their lives during a night filled with dancing, games, and refreshment. There were about 180 people who enjoyed the Narts festivities. The event was geared toward boys ages 11 and under to enjoy with their mothers or other family members. And there are several pictures of moms and kids dancing and celebrating Valentine's Day. From the Andover Townsman, cleaning their clocks. Andover master horologist keeps the hands of time moving. Time is of the essence. It will tell. It's also a thief and a gift, an ever-present moving too fast or too slow, depending on circumstances. Bob Frischman takes special care in accounting for it. Right now, he's playing the family piano, pressing a series of soft, incisive chords on a 100-year-old Steinway jazzy measure, My Favorite Things from the musical The Sound of Music. His favorite things include time and movement, specifically clocks, and they are all around him here at his home in Andover. They stand, hang, and sit in rooms throughout the house. To Frischman, they possess grace and grandeur. There's harmony in the way the pieces work together. He wants everyone to appreciate antique timepieces and to recognize the care they require to continue ticking and chiming for hours, days, weeks, months, years, and centuries. The first indication that Frischman has a penchant for time rests on his front door, a placard bearing the name Bell Time, sure for his clock overhauling company, Bell Time Clocks. He has retired from his paying career in clock overhauling, but still repairs antique clocks free of charge for cultural centers, including historical societies, museums, and libraries. The only compensation he asks is the opportunity to give a free public presentation on clocks and their care. Frischman has over 8,000 clocks, some 300 were of the long case type, what some people call grandfather's clocks. Everyone was different, he says, even if it was the same mantle clock that was made in Connecticut by tens of thousands, there was always something different about it because it was 100 years old. So different things happened to it, and they made many, many, many different versions of it. This year, he overhauled a 221-year-old Caleb Wheaton grandfather clock that had stood still, not working for about a decade, in Flint Memorial Library in North Reading. It had been overhauled in 1992. Inside the panel door, scrawled in thick black letters and numbers, is Caleb Wheaton long case, 1802. Below it is a cleaned and oiled heading and series of dates in pencils. In April, Frischman removed the bonnet from the clock and brought it to his workshop in the basement of his home on Poor Street, where he took it apart piece by piece, each of which he cleaned and polished. The grandfather's name stems from a popular song written in 1876, My Grandfather's Clock, about a clock that kept perfect time from the day a boy was born until 90 years later, on the day the old man died. Before the song gained currency at the time of the U.S. Centennial, no one would have referred to these tall ornament timepieces as grandfather's clocks. Until electric clocks became popular, everyone knew wind-up clocks had to be cleaned every couple of years to keep them working. Dust, dirt, and friction are the enemies of clocks. They require diligent care and repair. New England is filled with grandfather's clocks that are no longer in operation because they have not been maintained. It bothers Frischman to see non-working clocks at a museum or historical society. He said that one of the worst things that a would-be clock caretaker can do is spray them with WD-40, a magnet for dirt. And with dirt comes friction and broken gears, teeth and pins and other pieces. But a restored, well-cared-for clock is pleasure throughout his presence and periodic soft-claiming, chiming on the hour. There is something more than knowing the time that an antique clock, regular ticking, offers a sense of continuity and reassurance. It's like a heartbeat, making it count. Frischmann has been tinkering since childhood. His father was a chemist and worked in Lawrence at Malden Mills, and then for a company that pioneered synthetic wigs. In college, Frischmann majored in political science. He then worked in the House of Representatives in Washington, D.C. from 1973 to 84, including as an aide and speechwriter for Shirley Chisholm, the first black woman elected to the U.S. Congress. In the mid-1980s, he moved back to Massachusetts and worked in a family business as he and his wife, Jenna Rochinto, raised a family. He found a niche in clock repair and made a career of it. It was a fascination that endures. Frischmann owns 1,000 books on clocks. Among them is the biography he recently wrote about the 18th century Philadelphia clockmaker Edward Dufeld. His next book will be on the Mulliken family of clockmakers from 18th century Massachusetts. He displays three Mulliken clocks from Salem, Lexington, and Haverhill, dating between 1760 and 1810. He wears an Apple Watch daily and a Rolex from a former occasion, one of which took place October 28th in England, where he gave the Dingwall Below Lecture at the British Museum, a prestigious annual horological event. Frischmann is what is referred to as a horological, a master horologicalist, a term that somehow sounds less dignified than the designation it deserves. At home, he showcases a jeweler's watch from the Waltham, a clock known for extremely accurate time. Art on the wall depicts figures like Napoleon Bonaparte with clocks. Frischmann named his company after a Winslow Homer wood engraving published in Harper's Bazaar in 1868 called Bell Time, part of a series the artist did on New England factory life. Homer's brother was a chemist in Lawrence Mill, and people who toiled in the mills lived by the bell. Frischmann has repaired two clocks that belong to Homer. Frischmann is a time person, a clockman, whose work ticks away on numerous shelves and floors, including the second floor of the Flint Library, lending a presence to the moment, respect for the past, and anticipation of the future. And there's a picture of Bob Frischmann in his home in Andover, where he has hundreds of books about clocks and clock repairs. I'll now read a few articles from the Londonderry Times. Elmwood Orchards closes, leaving legacy and uncertainty. After more than a century as one of Londonderry, New Hampshire's most beloved agricultural landmarks, Elmwood Orchard has closed its doors, ending a 115-year tradition that shaped the town's identity and created memories for generations of local families. The announcement came directly from the Elmwood family, who share their gratitude with the community and reflected on the thousands of visitors who made the orchard part of their annual traditions. They spoke of the laughter in the corn maze, the couple who returned year after year because the maze had been their first stay, and the families who came back each fall to pick apples and to take photos among the trees. We have wonderful memories, and we thank you all for that, the family wrote. The orchard was founded in 1910 when young Wayland H. Elmwood was just 12 years old. He took the responsibility for the family farm. Over the decades, he expanded the orchard and built a reputation for quality produce and warm hospitality. Whalen worked the land for nearly a century before passing away in 2012 at the age of 96, leaving the operation to his son, Wayne, and Whalen Jr., who continued the business and added the popular corn maze that became a regional attraction. For 150 years, the orchard stood as a symbol of Londonderry's agricultural heritage, drawing visitors from across New England. While the orchard itself has not been publicly listed as sold, the Elmwood family did sell a portion of the land in 2022. The town of Londonderry purchased 54 acres of Nashua Road property the family had owned since 1949. The parcel was acquired for conservation, agriculture, and recreation purposes and remains protected open space. As of now, no public land records indicate that the main orchard's property on Elmwood Road has changed hands. For now, the community is left with the memories of fall afternoons spent wandering the maze, picking apples, and watching the seasons change across the orchard's rolling fields. The closing of Elmwood Orchards marks the end of an era in Londonderry, but its legacy of Elmwood family and the joy their farm brought to generations will remain part of the town's story long after the last apple has been picked. A few articles from the AARP magazine. When aging isn't in sync, how do couples navigate growing older at different paces? Neither of us was good on ice skates, so that distant December night was more festive than fun. Sherry clutched my hand to steady herself, but also because that's what a couple do under bright lights, cheeks cold and feet pinched by rental skates. More recently, I skated again. This time, Sherry stood outside the rink, unwilling to chance her wonky knee. We anticipate aging out of sync when we were married in 1993. She is 17 years older. But for much of our 3 decades together, we skated together. The past couple of years, not so much. Sherry's now 78. I'm 61. These days, hikes up hills more readily takes her breath. Her heart drug makes her arms bruise as easily as ripe bananas. We wonder whether she's on an aging elevator while I'm taking the stairs. We're not alone. Even like-aged couples can move differently through time. They wonder, as we do, how best to accommodate each other's place, wait, skip ahead, find new ways to walk and step. Reciprocity is central, said Meng Ho, associate professor at the University of California, Davis, who studied empathy in older adults. She said that being mutually understanding is helpful for couples aging in different places and paces. About a year and a half ago, with Sherry's encouragement, I retired early from my career as a creative writing professor. We decided the years themselves needed to slow. Now we travel more, exercise more, take more time to identify bird songs. 3 or 4 times over the past couple of years, we've been given ourselves a moment. Sherry has turned to me and spoken the phrase. The words are a kind of a charm or a spell reminder, but also a way of seeking hope into reality. These are the good old days, she says. Thank you for listening to the Lowell Association for the Blind's Lab Radio. Lab Radio is a member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network. There are many ways to listen to Lab Radio. You can request a specialized radio receiver, or for more information about our radio reading service, call Lab at 978-454-5704. Our number again at Lab, 978-454-5704. And you can listen to Lab Radio anytime by dialing 1-631-359-9069. Any time to listen for Lab Radio by calling 1-631-359-9069. And you can visit our website where you can tune into Lab Radio at LowellAssociationForTheBlind.org. That's all one word, Lowell Association for the Blind.org. Thanks for listening.